an A&E original podcast.
Why do you like senior citizens so much? Please tell.
Because they have not a care left in the world. I like people who are genuinely themselves. Senior citizens, they will tell you about yourself, but then celebrate you. They are who they are. No projection of insecurities. They live their best lives, and they've lived a lot of it.
Literally, they'll tell you you're trash and give you $20 to have a good day.
Yes! I like people who are themselves, okay?
Yes.
Welcome to The Table Is Ours, a podcast where we celebrate, highlight, and discuss topics affecting the Black community with our Black faves. From Black motherhood to mental health, we cover it all at this table because we are no longer asking for a seat at the table. We're making our own. With me today is my favorite co-host, Kirby Dixon. If Kirby were a weekend vibe, she would be an intense morning workout going into like a day party vibe. I'm talking like Rihanna Wild Thoughts Near the Beach vibe. Because you're so, like, you get it done in the morning, and then you can party at night. Best of both worlds.
Know me, sis. Know me. And y'all know who that is. That is my girl, Amira Lawali. If Amira were a weekend vibe, she would be at brunch on a boat with your favorite auntie doing the cha-cha slide in the middle of the dance floor.
I love those cheesy brunch cruises. You know, people like take their family out when they're in town. It's very touristy. I love it.
I'm totally with you.
I love doing the electric side drunk with people's grandparents. I love drinking with people's grandmas. That's what I miss the most.
Wait, this is such a personal story, but like, can I tell you that this weekend, so my best friend from preschool, her family is still in Philadelphia, and her grandma turned 101 years old. We literally went out. It was a little car drive-by. We said hello. Her name is Margie. Shout out to Margie. I'm obsessed with her. She is literally like classy, bougie, ratchet, but not ratchet. Like ratchet in the exact ratchet you spoke about. Like, I will tell you about yourself, young thing.
But then it's okay.
Yeah, like you deserve to be read, clearly. But she's like the sweetest person. She literally had a little chair, little crown, balloon. 101. Can you imagine living for 101 years?
I love that for her.
She's having the time of her life.
That's amazing. Because I feel like once you're there, you just live the life the way you want to. Like, no one can tell you anything. Mm-hmm. Like, as long as you're not racist. But, like, if you're, like, a non-racist old person, love it. Love that for you.
Amira, this is what's going to happen. The news station is going to come to your home. You're going to be, like, turning 100 years old. Amira, what was your secret to living a long, fulfilling life? And Amira said, go to brunch every weekend. Drink champagne as much as you want. And do whatever the heck you
want.
That's
it. That's it. Honestly, the fountain of youth is tequila. Is that the end of the bottle?
Say Clara. Actually, I second that. But you know who's young and had a lot of wisdom to share with us this week? The incredible Kendrick Sampson. Kendrick is a lot of things, but we know him as an incredible actor. He's been in so many of our favorite projects, including How to Get Away with Murder and Insecure. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Nathan. But he's also an activist and someone who has fought for the rights of our people, Black people, for a long time now.
We talked activism and art, moving from inclusion to liberation, and he shared his very personal story about his recent experience with the police in Colombia. Kendrick Sampson, let's get into it.
This Mother's Day, treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their advanced eye care duo brightens and firms skin around your eyes, while the Golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths skin all over. Go to OSEAMalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off your first order site-wide.
We're really excited to speak with you.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
We always start every episode with the same question because this year has been a lot. It's been a little difficult. It's been stressful. So first question, how are you? How are you really?
Yeah, I'm stressed the f*** out. I ain't even gonna lie. It's been a day and it's been a week and it's been a year.
Yeah.
It's felt like 10 years. Yes. Like a whole decade. But yeah, I've been stressed out, but you know, this is brightening up my day.
Great. Happy to hear that. I will say I can relate to you on that, and that daylight savings has been kicking my ass. So
it really has.
That's been terrible.
It's such a scam. It's such a scam.
I just can't wake up, and that's a problem.
Yeah, definitely been having trouble getting up out of bed.
Yeah, but we made it and we're here. Yeah. So we're just going to kick this right off. And I want to say, many people know you as being a heartthrob, right? We're just going to put it out there. A heartthrob on shows like How to Get Away with Murder and Insecure. We all love your character, Nathan.
Love.
I know, love. I'm trying to keep it cool, girl. Trying to keep it cool.
Okay.
So we know what it's like to stan someone, but want to know, what's it like for you being on the receiving end of that standom?
You know, it depends, especially, you know, any show that I've been on, it's gone up and down, like, wow, you look great, I don't trust you, I think you you know, like, I'm about to whoop your butt. Like, I've gotten all kinds of things, especially in the airport. The airport is like, I don't know what it is about the airport, but
people get bold.
Oh my God, do tell.
I feel like TSA watches the most TV. I don't know how they recognize folks. It's just like they're experts, and they'll point you out, and they'll be like, and it's like you're stuck in the airport, you know. So people be
you're trying to go under the radar, keep it cool.
Yeah.
Called out.
People be like sitting down next to you, asking you questions, accusing you of things, yelling at you. From across the airport. So yeah, it's been interesting.
Got it. So we touched on, I guess, actor Kendrick a little bit, but I think something that also is so weighted in who we see you is like activist Kendrick. So if you can touch on, like, what was the tipping point for you that made you say, okay, I need to go into action, I need to touch into activism? Like, what spiraled that?
I've always been outspoken, depending on, you know, with anything. Just if I saw something, you know, and I've had an opinion on it, you know, my mom a lot of time was like, shut up, you talking too much. But I always had this, you know, say something. And so it used to be just morals and such, but it turned into activism more because I was doing my best to, especially around Trayvon Martin, right? I was doing my best to challenge people, but still, you know, for placate white supremacy, you know, like, kind of,
yeah,
you know, I was still trying to keep my job and like,
yep. I understand that.
I felt like I was
relatable content.
Yeah, I felt like I was doing enough. I was like, you know, I'm telling people about it and trying to, you know, not upset white people. And then I realized, you know, white people are going to think what they think about me regardless and call me whatever, ghetto, whatever. I remember one time in particular, somebody was like, you know, I was being careful with how I approached them. They were making me mad. And I said, please stop. And, you know, and they said, don't get ghetto on me. And I was like, you know what? You're right. I was like, you're right. Okay, you know what? Since you want it, you know what I'm saying?
I'm going to give you what you want.
Ain't nothing I can do. Like, I have a great education.
That's an open invitation.
Right.
Yeah. I can code switch if I want to. I can be all, you know, I can do whatever. I'm great at imitations. I could imitate you. I could sound more white than you.
Right.
Just
right.
Because that's what I've been doing my whole life is doing imitations. That's how I got into acting. Right. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, if I want to, I can, and I've done so much up to this point to in realizing that so much of my communication is making white people comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I finally said, you know, around the time of Trayvon Martin, between Trayvon Martin and Mike Brown, I said, I'm tired of constantly assessing how I communicate based on what makes white people comfortable while people are dying. If I have a larger platform and my reservations and my silence or lack of activism, lack of boldness, right, of framing exactly what it is, how violent and terrible it is, if that's going to lead to more people dying, right? You know, if I got to lose a job to save a life, you know what I'm saying? So then that's what I'm going to do. So that around 2015 is when I just was like, I'm all in, and, you know, what white people think.
Yeah, it's like you get to a place where you're truly fed up and done with making yourself smaller to make people around you, specifically white people, more comfortable. It's just, it's up to a point where you say, I'm not doing this anymore. That's on you and the learning that you need to do to understand, why are you uncomfortable around me?
Because it's exhausting.
It is.
It's exhausting carrying two lives, like acting like two people just to make someone else comfortable, who is literally not, they're not enough. Like, they're not. They're not Beyonce. I don't, like, why am I putting this much work into someone who's, like, not enough?
And they're not going to be happy regardless. So what's the point?
Yeah.
So I do want to bring up someone who you've spoken a lot about, the incredible Angela Davis. I feel like we're often talking about the new wave of activists, but a lot of them got their tools from people like Angela Davis, like Ruby Bridges. So how do you use the tools that you've learned from Angela Davis in your own activism?
Yeah, I call Angela Davis my president.
Your president. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, one, she's another one that always articulates things. I mean, she's a professor. She's like, I mean, she articulates things more effectively than I can. And I'm always striving for that effective communication.
Yeah, she does that so well.
Yeah, she's a great listener. And that's a tool, right? Great listener. She assesses and then she responds succinctly and effectively. It blows my mind every time. But, you know, the way she's able to articulate abolition is incredible and continues to challenge me on how deeply I'm thinking about abolition internally, right? Mm-hmm. And I think of abolition simply as uprooting the bad seeds, right? I always think a good seed produces a good tree, produces good fruit. A bad seed produces a bad tree, produces bad fruit. So I think of abolition as uprooting those bad seeds. Trees that were formed from those bad seeds, because those bad seeds are the core and the essence of them. So policing, prisons are always going to be slave catching and slavery. They are corrupt at their core. They do not belong here. And so you have to uproot them and plant new seeds that are founded in care and nourishment and safety and accountability. And, you know, I'm always challenged to think of that more intersectionally, where it applies, and it applies everywhere. It applies in our interpersonal relationships and our communication and our habits, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think one of hers is like listening and answering effectively without ever compromising on values. Ever.
Right.
She's been saying the same thing maybe 2,000 different ways, but she's been saying the same thing for decades.
Yeah.
And she was willing to put her life on the line to protect those who aren't even necessarily the acceptable ones, right? A lot of the time we stand up for our brothers and sisters when they have college degrees, when they seem like they were on a good track.
Yeah.
But Angela Davis was one of the few that would put her life on the line for someone, whether they were acceptable or not. They deserve justice. They deserve freedom. They deserve fairness. And their life is still, and their choices are still, in the context of white supremacy and its trauma.
Have you ever spoken to her or gotten advice from her directly?
No. No.
Okay, we're speaking that into the universe.
I know, it's coming.
You know, she's one of those people, I have so many connections to her, and I've been invited to events with her and everything, and it hasn't worked out, and I don't know if I want it to. You know what I'm saying? I'm like,
I get that.
Like, meeting your idol, it's heavy.
I'd be okay if I didn't ever meet her.
Yeah.
But I'd also be okay if I met her tomorrow.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's incredible.
That's amazing. Well, Amira mentioned this before, but we have, in one way, we have Kendrick, the actor, the artist, and we have Kendrick, the activist. And we actually just saw you, obviously, on the Grammys perform with Lil Baby, which at the core of, I want to get a song correct, the bigger picture is activism and taking a stance toward all the injustice that's happening in this country. So where do those two selves intersect? And how do you separate the two? Or do you feel the need to separate those two selves?
I don't. I don't feel the need to separate them. I think activism, I don't think, I know activism is a lifestyle. Activism is a way of being. Mm-hmm. And you could be an activist for good or bad things, right?
Yeah,
right.
It is a lifestyle in taking your values and standing up for those values. Whether you want to die on a problematic hill or a hill that actually liberates people and is morally sound, then
right.
That is your choice. But I think that in the same way, abolition is a lifestyle, right? Abolition, you apply when no one is around. Uprooting those things in yourself, those problematic things in yourself, the harmful things in yourself that are harming yourself.
Right.
And also harming other people, problematic behaviors. And then and uprooting those and planting new seeds that are rooted in good habits, right?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Healthy habits, nourishing habits. So it applies to everything. It applies to art. You know, art, one of my favorite sayings, there is no revolution without art, right? There's no separation in good doing.
Right.
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 In doing right. So I do my best to do it in my art, through my art. And that doesn't mean that everything has to be an activist-centered project or like
right.
a blatant liberation. Liberation happens in just displaying the full humanity of people who are normally criminalized, demonized, and marginalized. Black people,
yep.
Right? Telling the story of an indigenous person that lives in the city
mm-hmm.
in 2021. How many times have you seen this story?
Yep.
Never! Because they always display indigenous people as, you know, back then,
yep. Mm-hmm.
Savages, you know,
yep.
Somebody, it's whatever it is. It's they once were, but they are here. They live in the city. There's a lot of them in Inglewood.
Yeah.
Right?
And they're up with the modern times just like us.
And so that's just showing, like, you know, Insecure, showing two black women
just living,
navigating their friendship,
right?
Right.
Yeah.
Is an activist project. And it, you know, doesn't center a specific issue or anything, but displaying their full humanity. Neither one of them are perfect, my God, right? they have all kinds of different
perfectly
issues.
Perfectly imperfect.
Right. And that is healing and challenging and culture shifting, right? Which is activism.
Yeah.
So I do my best to make it a lifestyle, taking, you know, nourishing myself and resting is
mm-hmm.
supposed to be part of my activism. I'm not as good at sleeping, but I do my best to work out and, you know, especially since they be having me naked on TV. but it's part of my health, right? It's in our wellness. That's what we're doing this for, is autonomy over our wellness, right? Being able to determine our communities and our own personal wellness. And so it's inseparable from activism. And there is no part of my life that isn't. My spirituality, my career, my art.
Yeah.
So just change the subject just a little bit. So I'm from Houston. Gang, gang.
Hey, H-Town in the house.
I know Kirby is tired of me bringing this up on every single episode.
Girl, go ahead. It's all good.
You're like our fourth guest from Houston, and I literally fan out every single time because I love my city so much. I have so much pride in Houston. And it's hard to explain to people who aren't from our city, like who aren't from the same place. I have so much pride in the city, but I will tell you recently, every time I hear Houston, like my heart drops a little bit because I'm still mourning what everyone went through a month ago when we were left out mm-hmm. to die and freeze by our government.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Right. Yeah.
And right. There's so many different ways that we can speak about that. Like, it was so hurtful. So many things happened. But like at the end of the day, for me, it wasn't just about weather, it was about politics.
course.
And for a long time, like, everyone's been talking about, like, what is going on in Texas. The world saw what was happening in Texas. There was a clear chart of what was happening. When I think about Texas and Georgia in particular, I think of, like, a state that everyone says is red, but we're not red because we're red. We're red because of suppression. Mm-hmm. We're red because Black and brown people cannot vote. And we saw that in this last election. Mm-hmm. So in your opinion, for someone who, like, works in this field, what can marginalized communities do to gain power in a system that was not made for us and is constantly working against us?
So first of all, there's so many awful humans that I got a lot of words for. I'm doing my best to limit my curse words, but
you literally gave us hold us back. That's the energy I just got. Hold me back.
I have so many problems with them, and I don't like to hold back my rhetoric so much because I like people to understand that there's no decorum when your actions are leading to violence for my people.
Yep, right.
And especially, it ain't just my people, my Black people, my brown people. It's my family. Like, right. I will run up. Like, mm-hmm. it's not metaphorical. Like, you are actually harming my family.
Yes.
Right.
Right? Your actions are directly affecting. And one thing that I think we need to do is to accept that there is no decorum, that they have no decorum, right? Like, if I get in a fight on the street, I'm not following the rules of the boxing ring. Somebody mm-hmm. got, you know, picking up chairs and mess. I'm like, okay, well, I got to do whatever I got to do to survive, right?
Yes. Picking up a bench then.
A bar. Okay.
Right. Hang out. Right? So you have, you know, we've been conditioned to believe that we have to be so perfect and so deserving in order to earn our rage.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a very deep and complex answer. White supremacy is violent, right? It's extracting resources from our communities, leaving us with little to nothing to survive, actually implementing policies that harm us. It's violent.
Yes.
It's just because their hand isn't the hand that strikes you doesn't mean that they are not violent, mm-hmm, right?
Right.
They are violent. And so our reaction must be proportionate. I always try to tell people I am not, I am much more Malcolm X, you know, I am nonviolent as long as you are nonviolent with me. Okay.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, that's what I learned growing up too.
Once you violent with me, gloves are off, right?
Yes.
Brass knuckles have been put on.
I'll match your energy.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And this is violence, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so more than anything, I will go back to, I believe that we need to adopt framework of abolition that don't let them scare us away from and say that it's too radical. All of the solutions that actually will get us free, they're going to deem as radical. They're going to criminalize, right?
Yeah, because we're using their own weapons against them.
Yeah, that's going to be their tactic. That has been their tactic for all time, right? So slavery did never go away. It transitioned into Jim Crow and prison leasing and slave patrols became police and all of this, right? So if slavery didn't go away and abolitionists were trying to uproot and abolish slavery, abolition didn't go anywhere, right?
Right, right.
Just like slavery evolved, abolition evolved. We still have to uproot these systems. We still have to eradicate slavery. And that comes in the form of capitalism. That comes in the form of transphobia. It comes in the form of so many things that divide us, xenophobia, to make sure that we don't coalition build. And that's mm-hmm. the last thing that they want yep. is for us to coalition build, realize we deserve better, and fight for it with all the vigor that we should. You
right.
saw people actually started changing things when they started burning shit down last year.
Okay.
Right? And then they started placating us, telling us, speaking of Texas, that we got Juneteenth, right, as a national holiday.
Yep.
Like that's yes. something.
Put a little Band-Aid on it real quick.
Right. Oh. I'm like, you can't give us that.
Exactly. We have that.
We've had
that from birth. Like, that's been a thing for years.
You can't give us that.
It was funny being in New York and seeing other people embrace Juneteenth, but I was like, this is an act. Like, this right. is, you may have gone to work on Juneteenth, but we didn't go to, it's always a holiday. Right. How are you going to give me something that's mine?
Yeah, and I'm not about to settle for no seat at no table. Mm-hmm. We built the table. The table's ours.
The table is ours. Speak it again, Kendrick. There we go.
The table is included in my reparations package, which I still haven't received. Speaking of a stimmy, I'm not worried about no stimmy. I need my reparations. You
right,
owe
give
me a
the
lot
land
more
back
that.
That I deserve. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Speaking of all this, like, performative stuff, though, DEI, or diversity, equity, and inclusion,
I was just about to go there.
has totally become a buzzword this past year, but it's existed forever. We live DEI, right?
Right.
We all do. Right. But you've started talking about how we need to move past DEI into liberation. So can you talk about how do those two terms differ? What are the two meanings, and why should we move past DEI into liberation?
Yeah. So I do my best not to diminish representation because I do know that seeing people, I saw people growing up doing things and they looked like me.
Yep.
Fewer people than now, obviously. But I saw people, a few people that looked like me, and I was like, oh, I could do that.
I can do that. Man, exactly.
I could do that. And I also saw other things, to be honest, and I think that we all do see other things and we're like, I want to be in that position. Why can't I do that?
Yes. Right.
And then everything in society tells us that we can't because of whatever reasons that white supremacy is cooked up.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's always white supremacy.
It really is.
Right. Well, that's, you know, that's the foundation of this occupying force that we call America.
Yep.
And so when you talk about diversity and inclusion, the problem is it ends at representation and we settle for representation. And we're not talking about representation and ideology. We're literally just talking about skin color.
Right.
Or gender. Right. Right. And so it's an aesthetic thing. Right.
Yes.
And normally it's always going to be, they're going to search for the one that looks like us, but will act in their interest.
Oh,
right?
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes.
Yes.
As best as possible, they're going to find somebody to service their needs that they're comfortable with, not that will actually get us free.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. That the person that will challenge them the least.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way in Hollywood, if a panel of white folks sees six different stories starring Black people, written by Black people, they're going to choose the story that challenges them the least.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The story that they can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why they don't need to be making them decisions.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
And so, you know, the biggest problem with diversity and inclusion is I'm not looking for, it has nothing to do with liberation. It has to do with looking better. It has to do with liability, mm-hmm. right? And being included. Being included is not liberating. It is being allowed into a space.
Right.
When we don't have to worry about that allowance, right? When we don't have to worry about being allowed anymore, that's true freedom, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You're still the gatekeeper.
Yes.
You have to give me permission.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And that is not, that's not liberation. And so if you're talking about corporations and other entities, administrations, like this is the most diverse administration, is it the most liberating administration? Are they actually implementing laws and policies and fighting for things that will actually liberate us? Or is it just, and so far what I've seen is it's more so just representation. It's more numbers and liability than actual action, right?
Right. I think what you're speaking about is good because Amir and I are in corporate America. Obviously, we're still in media and entertainment, but we're on the suits side of things. And we saw this last year. You're talking about performative versus action, real, true liberation and change. And we saw that after the death of George Floyd last June, almost every brand in the land decided to post a black square, use the hashtag Black Lives Matter. We see the exact same thing occurring now with all of the hate towards the AAPI or Asian American Pacific Islander community. But when you take a look inside and you see the boardrooms and the actual actions that have taken place since those performative actions have occurred, the boardrooms look the same.
Yeah.
The numbers stayed the same.
Say it.
And now it's just like you have people on the diversity side from the representational side that they're putting at the forefront. But in terms of true liberation, like you're speaking about, the people that are making the decisions, the people that are allowing other people to rise to the top, it's still white. And and I think so. I appreciate you making that distinction because that's absolutely true. And I think it's not something we've heard as often until you made that statement recently. So I appreciate you bringing that distinction to our podcast, but also out into the world.
Yeah.
And it's not just white. It's white. It's straight. It's rich. It's male. Like it's they all look the same in the boardroom. And then when you bring us in and we come in as the only black women on our teams, there's no room for us to breathe or grow or succeed. Like we're set up to fail and we're just like these figures. So I don't know. I don't know when we'll get there. I don't know when we'll get to liberation, but I think like you said, like it won't happen because that's when they lose power.
Right.
Right. That is the thing is they're going to always choose. And this is the reason you don't see a lot of, I think a lot more diversity would be happening in boards and such if they could find black people, brown people, Asian, AAPI people, whoever, who could fit their mold, right?
Yep.
Who could meet their qualifications. So number one, you already have all of these systems in place to make sure that we don't meet their qualifications.
Exactly.
Right. Right.
They hoard the access to their qualifications, right? And block access to their qualifications. And then on top of that, they want somebody who meets their qualifications who will not challenge their power.
Yeah. Right.
And they have to give up power. And you know, that's something that I constantly do my best when I'm talking to, advising, whatever, white folks who want to bring black people into the space. Are you willing to give up some power?
Right.
Don't bring us in here and then order us around, tell us how to be black.
Right. As consultants. Consultants on blackness.
Right.
With a retainer fee. Excuse me.
Right. That is called exploitation.
Yeah.
Right. Right? Bring us in, pay us what you owe us, and give us...
Pay me what you owe me.
Right. Give us autonomy over the blackness. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? We're not here to placate you.
Right.
So, you know, it is a power thing. And a lot of people, especially in a lot of us, are afraid to say that word power and take power and know that we deserve power.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. It's that imposter syndrome creeping in, that negative self-talk. Right. I'm telling you. Yeah.
We are so used to the victim, right? The victim gets the attention. The victim, you know, will get pity. And that's our end, hopefully.
That's supposed to be enough.
Maybe get some power, right? Yeah.
Yep.
And it's like, no, we need to come in knowing what we deserve, demanding it, and coalition building to achieve it.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time also we're taught individualism. Well, not all, some of the time, most of the time, all of the time, you know, America is about individualism, which is, you know, survival. It's like, it's lonely at the top, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can't bring everybody with you, all of those things, which force you to shed your community and your connection to your community. It is in direct antithesis to coalition building.
Right.
You actually can bring folks with you, right?
Yeah. Hello.
You actually can coalition build and go in together. You are bringing every room you're in, you should be bringing other people in with you, whether that's metaphorically or literally, you consult with them people before you go into that room.
Yeah.
Right.
You strategize. If I cannot bring you in physically, what are the things that I need to look out for? And this is who I'm meeting with. And this is how we hold them accountable if something doesn't change.
Knowledge is power.
So we've spoken about the abuse of power conceptually, but we live this. I'm going to ease my way into this because I know it's still fresh for you. You touched on going on vacation earlier, and we kind of saw, I guess, the result of that on social media.
It was also really hard to watch.
It was hard to watch.
Yeah.
I know. And we saw the abuse from the Colombian police. And first off, I want to ask you, like, how are you? How are you doing mentally with that? Are you still in a moment of healing with that? And if you are okay and open to it, would you mind telling us what happened?
Sure. How am I now? I am still stressed out, and sometimes I have to kind of weigh if, you know, what part of the trauma that we experienced in the last year is informing that, and it might be all of it, right? So I didn't have a chance to heal from it. I still haven't had a chance to heal from the protests, right, and getting beat up by police in LA. I haven't had a chance to heal from my mama, who was 99, passing away right after, as I'm trying to get extracted from Colombia, you know. So there's so many, and a lot of people passed last year that I know, and because of COVID and life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so there's a lot of trauma that happened last year. That one was particularly traumatizing because I was like in a space of healing. Like, hey, I'm going to try to get the hell up away from here. And I was like, I'm going no matter what. I know y'all got a billion things for me to do, but I'm leaving.
Yeah.
And then as I finally try to ease into peacetime, you know, I get beat up by police and in another country, right? Where they're notorious for like kidnapping people and trying to assassinate leaders, especially Afro-Colombian, Black, and Indigenous leaders. And it was done in a very public way in the middle of the day, which seemed very targeted. But yeah, I mean, I'm a little hesitant because I guess I've written an op-ed about it. We're waiting to get that placed. And but at the same time, you know, I guess it doesn't hurt to talk about it. So I just don't know if I'm going to remember all of the details. But yeah, I essentially what happened, and I'll do my best to keep it short because it wasn't a short experience. So, you know, you walk around at night, there's a curfew, and especially coming closer to the curfew, they will roll up on you and ask you for your documents, and it's stop and frisk. It's exactly what it is. I was trying to rush and do some work and get out of the hotel because I was just stuck in this hotel. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm going to see the sunset. I'm going to get a haircut and see the sunset, eat. That was my plan, and then go back to work.
Yeah.
So I got out of my hotel. I asked one of my buddies on the street, hey, can you show me where this haircut place is? And he was like, cool. Walking with him, they rolled up from behind, which means they were either following, like to target us, right? Just us two walking in Centro Histórico, which is like the nicest area in Cartagena, that's most affluent and the safest. They tell you as long as you stay in those walls, which are literally like walls, big walls, colonial walls, as long as you stay within there, you're safe. And so I did, for the most part. And this at this time, like, just imagine walking down Rodeo Drive or somewhere in Beverly Hills or whatever. And these folks roll up on you, start yelling at you, tell you to put your hands up and face the wall. And so I'm like, all right. In at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, sun bright, beaming down, people all over. And he starts reaching in your underwear.
Wow.
Imagine that, right? You know, and I'm like, nah, bro, you can't do
that. Yeah, I don't even have words for that. I just have a face.
Wow.
This is like, and we went from zero to sexual harassment and like, you know, and so I tell him, no, he can't do that. And in my Spanish, I'm like, I'm not from here. I'm from America. You know, and he's like, I don't care. And he starts to like reach in my pockets and in my underwear. Wow. And I said, you can't do that. And he starts hitting me on my arms. Like I could do, you know, whatever I want to do. I can touch you however I want to touch you. And he, you know, and I said, no, you can't. I tried to keep my, I'm like, breathe. I'm like, remember you in a different country.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I'm good. I'm like, no, you cannot. I'm mm-hmm. already thinking I need to report this and whatever. But he's looking at me like he done snorted a little bit of cocaine and he's ready to go. And so I could tell he's amped up. And I couldn't, what I couldn't tell, it just seemed like, why are you so amped up? It seemed like he came to do this, right? And so he snatches my, as I'm, I said, I can, you know, show you my ID. I can do this. So I gave him my ID. He told me to empty out the contents of my bag. So I emptied out. He snatches my bag and the stuff and I catch it. And then he, meaning catch the stuff. And then he starts digging in my bag. And I'm like, no, I just told you I can show you my ID. I can empty out my bag myself. And that's when he hits me in my jaw. And pulls out his gun.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Automatically just hits me, pulls out his gun. Yeah. Cause you know, he thinks I'm probably gonna hit him back. Which I thought about, but I was like, the gun. But my eye was on the gun the entire time and it all happened very quickly. And I saw somebody recording and I was like, okay, you know, at least one person, I don't know who this is, but. And so, you know, he cuffs me and drags me through the streets. And wow. He cuffs me, inverts my hands like this so that I can't reach for anything.
Oh my gosh.
And like drags me through the streets by the cuffs. And like every time I try to talk to somebody and tell them where my hotel is, to call my hotel, who I am, he like yanks it. And he's like, you know, shut up. Don't say that. Shut up. Blah, 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 blah. They throw me in this like dark place that they call a police station, this dark like rundown corner after 20 minutes of walking, abandoned, like nobody's in there. And you know what we think of as police stations, right? I'm like, this ain't no damn police station, empty room.
Oh, no.
With no doors. I'm like, they about to kill me,
right?
Seen a lot of movies.
Yeah, I was like, they put me out to the corner so nobody from the outside from the street could see me. So I'm sitting there like, y'all about to either try to beat me up or kill me. So they start speaking to me in Spanish and yelling at me like, why did you blah 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 blah? And I was like, I don't understand what you're saying. And thank God my boy from the street stayed with me the whole time. He wasn't cuffed or anything, but he was like, I'm not leaving him because I told him to tell them I don't speak Spanish.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so he told him I didn't speak Spanish and was trying to translate for me. And then I just kept saying, I don't understand, hoping that they would let me. I just tell him, I need my translator app. I need my translator app. And so they finally uncuffed me so that I could translate. And I got my phone and started texting folks. Had terrible service, so I couldn't call anybody.
Of course,
or,
yeah.
Like, live stream or something. So I was just like WhatsApping all my Colombian buddies. And in, you know, very quickly, I had, you know, folks calling their captain, their general, and oddly, you know, some ambassadors texting me and some of the higher ranking police texting me, which I was like, oh, you know, I don't want that. But it turned into a big thing where, you know, the video went viral and they held me for 4 hours. They told me that they said in the media in El Tiempo, this huge newspaper, mm-hmm. biggest newspaper in Colombia, that they released me immediately, which was a lie.
Yeah, of course.
They held me for 4 hours, tried to intimidate me, tell me that I couldn't have anybody come translate for me, that I had to sign this document that said that I resisted arrest, that I, you know, and all this stuff, that I wouldn't show them my documents, that I resisted legal procedures. And it was a lot. Thank God people from, like, representatives from the hotel came, some local activists came. My community was who my community was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which again goes back to what it taught me, what it highlighted for me, is it's important to coalition build. It's important to build radical community with radical ideology, abolitionists, folks that, you know, because my folks jumped to it. You know right. what I'm saying?
Like, I love having a strong right. squad.
You do having need a squad.
Will always be there for you. Oh my gosh.
My people jumped to it. Thank God those activists stayed with me, translated, and made sure that I was okay, because even they followed me. I told them I was at the mall eating. I hadn't eaten. Y'all detained me for 5 hours, for 4 hours. The whole ordeal took five. And they were like, but we need this statement right now. And they came to the mall looking for me. And I was like, nah.
They were like, no, like this is, yeah. That's suspicious. No.
Yeah. I was like, hell nah. So, you know, it was an ordeal. And of course the embassy and all of these other people and international activists and everything got involved, but I did my best. And everybody was like, Representative Karen Bass was super helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez reached mm-hmm. out. A bunch of folks were incredible, but had no power, no power there.
Yeah. I just want to say, like, thank you, though, for telling your story here and, like, with us. I think it just solidifies how important it is to have a strong coalition and how coalition building is extremely important. But it's also, like, a reminder, you're not the first person that we've spoken to on this podcast who has, sadly, had an encounter with the police like this.
Not even.
And it happens all of the time.
And recently.
Yeah. So really appreciate you. Obviously, we don't want to make you relive that traumatic experience. It's still so fresh. But, like, for trusting us and for telling your story, that's all we want to do is help ensure that people know this happens all of the time.
All the time.
So thank you for that.
Yeah. I will say, and also, what I was able to do, they told me to stay in the hotel, not leave anything. But I think something that was important was I didn't leave until I snuck up out of that hotel, connected with some local activists, and went to the hood there. I was way safer. I didn't ever feel threatened in some of the most dangerous hoods there, interviewing family members of Harold Morales, who was killed by police, and other folks that had experienced police brutality and murder, right? Their family members and loved ones murdered. And I was like, I want to make sure that I tell their story. So we're editing together some of that footage of the folks that I interviewed while I was there, because they suffered that violence without my platform, my size platform.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
So it's happening in the shadows every day out there.
Yeah.
We're proud of you because of the way in which you have used your platform. Amir and I were actually laughing about this because your thirst traps are actual traps.
They're like essays.
Right? Like, here's this great photo of me, but also here's this link to this organization that you should be aware of.
Read this essay. Stop being racist. Check yourself.
And donate to.
But thirst trap, but check it.
Right. So that's how you use a thirst trap. We're super proud of you. A little bit of a harsh transition after that story, but we always like to give our guests an opportunity to brag about themselves. You're doing so much, not only in the entertainment space, but the activism space. So what do you have coming up? What's next? What do we have to look forward to from the Kendrick?
Well, Insecure Season 5.
Yes. I know. It makes me sad.
Sad, but excited.
I'm very, okay, honestly, that season got me through. Like, I think we all kind of got that first bit of, like, quarantine watching season 4.
Yeah.
Because we watched mm-hmm. it together, and it was the beginning of quarantine. We're all doing it that twice. Weekly. I know. So the fact that it's ending, bittersweet. But sorry, please continue.
Fifth and final season, I think it's going to be really dope. And I know it's going to be really dope. And good. And then I have other endeavors that I've been working really hard on, writing.
Build power.
Build power for sure. Yes. Build power. We're building infrastructure for our nonprofit, Build Power. Hiring a lot of folks to ramp up our work and continue f***ing shit up.
Do it. It needs to be.
Hey.
Yeah. Doing what we got to do and building up better for mm-hmm. us. And then, of course, you know, with my own producing and writing, I've been writing a lot and doing my best to find the time to work on my creative endeavors. And that's gotten more movement than ever, which I'm really excited about. So That's what I can talk about.
That's great.
That's amazing. We can't wait to stand. There's so much to stand from you coming up in the next couple of months, years. Yeah, we're here for it.
For sure. For sure.
So I'm going to ask you the one question we ask every single guest. We end the same way and some version of this question. So if you can fill in the blank, my black is powerful because.
My black is powerful because it contains all of the ancestors that came before me, the magic, the power, the transformative influence of all of the ancestors that came before me. Yeah.
Did we just stump you on a question? I know.
That's the first thing that came to my mind. It's hard because black, I feel black is my favorite color. Mm-hmm. I always said I don't ever try to tell me black ain't a color.
It's actually an absorption of all the colors, if we're being real.
All the colors. Mm-hmm. This is all what I'm colors. Saying. Mm-hmm. Yep. So it's so multi-layered and multifaceted in decolonizing meditation. part of what I do is imagine that my insides, when I'm meditating, imagine that my insides are all white. Right? That there's just this white space and it's not empty. It's full of this white energy. And that white energy can be frustrating. That white energy can be whatever state I'm in at that moment. And I do my best to imagine breathing in this deep, rich black energy that
has
just beautiful, multi-layered, different types of blacks. And it's like peering into the universe, into space, into the galaxy, and it's just filling me up, and all of us are in there together, and there's just like, I could walk you through my whole meditation,
but please do.
That's how I see black. You know, that's how I see black. So when you say my black is powerful because, I'm like, man, I it stumps me because I'm like, that's an overwhelming question. I could be here forever. I can't boil that down.
You literally like that visual of like consuming the strength of the Black Panther is what went through my head.
Yeah. And then I was like, oh, decolonizing that. Meditation. That's it. That's really it for me.
That was amazing. I mean, this has been so incredible.
It's been a delay.
We could have talked to you for
hours.
3, 4, 5 hours.
I know. We had so much to get to, but honestly, thank you for taking the time out to come out and sit
at
our table.
Thank you so much.
The table that we built, because we don't need a seat at other people's tables, like you
said. No.
There you go.
And consider us a part of your coalition now, too.
Oh, yeah.
So.
We roll up.
I appreciate that.
Thank you so much, though. We really appreciate it. Again, I say this all the time. You're one of our black faves for a reason.
You are.
You hold us down. You're real with us.
Yeah.
Listen, thank you for challenging us and challenging our community in the way that we need to be challenged. So we appreciate you.
We do.
Of course. I appreciate y'all letting me talk my shit.
Of course.
Thank you very much.
The Table's Ours is produced by us, Kirby Dixon and Amira Lawali. This episode was also produced by Mikami Lin and Richard White and edited by Melissa Kaplan. Our researcher is Emma Fredericks. Our executive producers are Jesse Katz and Ted Butler. The Table is Ours was created by A&E. Subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. See you next week.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.